This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Automakers, heal thyselves.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Stocks are taking a beating this morning. The Dow is down about 3%, more than 238 points. NASDAQ down 3%. S&P 500 down about 3.25% so far in trading. Japanese automakers led declines in Asia. Markets there fell between 4 and 5%, and European shares are lower by 2 and 3%. Now, why the numbers are what they are this morning. Investors are trying to gauge the engine failure that is the American automobile industry. This is the Obama administration gives General Motors and Chrysler one more chance to either get it together or get out of its face. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson joins us now. Jeremy, Rick Wagner's out as GM at CEO at GM, and the government's giving it 2 months to come up with a better plan. The markets are tanking this morning. Coincidence?
Doubtful, I would say. The B word, I think, is what people are paying attention to, bankruptcy, and it was floated really seriously by the administration for the first time when it comes to these automakers. President Obama's going to come out later this morning and say that the government will guarantee the warranties on some American-made vehicles, which, of course, means that they are willing to go down that road into bankruptcy and not freak people out about buying American cars. Wall Street not reacting so well this morning. I spoke a few minutes ago with Anton Schutz, who is the president of Mendon Capital Advisors.
Well, I mean, bankruptcy is an awful word. A lot of people get wiped out, creditors, certainly bondholders and equity holders. So, yeah, the threat of that is pretty scary.
So, Steve, I think the point is Wall Street is being reminded of the huge task that lies ahead in terms of restructuring the auto industry.
So, Jeremy, what lies ahead then for GM?
Well, immediately, they've got to figure out in the next 60 days, this is the government is going to fund them for the next 60 days, they've got to figure out what to do with the United Auto Workers Union and the bondholders. And what they're trying to do is get each stakeholder to agree to, in the bondholders' case, forgive some of the debt in exchange for equity in GM, and in the UAW's case, to give up some of their pension and health benefits in exchange for stock in the company. Of course, that's a tough sell, because why would you want stock in GM right now?
Lots to talk about in the days ahead. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson joining us from New York. Jeremy, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
And as for Chrysler, where that B word also comes into play, the administration is giving it and Italy's Fiat 1 month to make a deal. That's if they want another $6 billion in federal loans. Our man in London, Stephen Beard, joins us now. Stephen, if this is the reality, what is it that Fiat will bring to Chrysler?
Well, survival, apart from anything else, because this task force has made it clear that unless Chrysler does form a partnership with a big foreign company like Fiat, it's not going to get any more taxpayers' money after 30 days. But quite apart from that, according to Professor David Bailey of the Birmingham Business School, Fiat would be a pretty good partner for Chrysler.
They'll bring two things. One is expertise and technology, but also they've done a great turnaround job at Fiat. If you go back 5 years, it was in pretty bad shape. They're now in good shape, producing good cars with a good position in the market.
And is Fiat not worried about these costs, though, Stephen, such as the retirement and health care benefits, all of those things that go along with in a deal like this?
Well, indeed, you would think that this would be a major concern, that this might be a millstone, and they would like to deal with this very much before these 30 days are up and not after they've done their deal with Chrysler. Nevertheless, Fiat is very, very keen indeed on getting into bed with Chrysler. We're in a period of great upheaval in the whole world auto market. We could wind up with only 6 or 8 major international car firms at the end of all this period of process of transition. And it does appear that Fiat would like to be wind up as one of those 6 or 8 giant car companies along with Chrysler.
All right. Our European correspondent, Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
You're listening to The Morning Report on Monday, March 30th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Washington Mutual Bank, or WaMU, used to be the country's biggest savings and loan until it collapsed in the largest bank failure in American history back in September. Now, new owner J.P. Morgan Chase is starting to erase the last vestiges of a bank that was more than 120 years old. Today in California, former WaMU branches are starting to get a makeover. Amanda Aronchik reports.
Rebranding these former WaMU branches in California will cost $375 million. Gary Kishner is a spokesperson for Chase. He says one reason it's so expensive is because WaMU did its best to avoid looking like a bank.
It was very much like going into a coffee shop. The people that designed the branches were the same people that designed Starbucks. So it had that same type of retail feel.
Kishner says the new look will be more traditional. Jean-Pierre Dubé of the University of Chicago says Chase has little choice if it wants to absorb WaMU seamlessly.
Washington Mutual's brand is kind of incompatible with almost any other bank's brand because it makes fun of them.
Dubé says that poking fun at stodgy banking did resonate with younger customers.
Their strategy towards retail banking probably had little to do with their ultimate financial failure.
But Dubé says Chase is banking on its conservative, reliable image and hoping WaMU customers realize banking isn't so much fun anymore. I'm Amanda Aronchik for Marketplace.
Raise your hand if you'd like to do something about big bank overdraft fees. Yeah, that's what I thought. Today's the deadline for the public to weigh in about proposed changes the Federal Reserve is considering. They're thinking about requiring banks to get customers' consent before enrolling them in their overdraft programs. Right now, nearly all banks sign customers up for those hefty fees automatically. Danielle Carson reports.
The Federal Reserve's website features hundreds of complaints from people getting slapped with unexpected overdraft fees when they use their debit or ATM cards. A survey by the Center for Responsible Lending finds a majority doesn't want to be automatically enrolled in an overdraft program.
Most people want their debit card transactions to be declined if they would result in an overdraft. Now you can use your debit card for the smallest of purchases. It will go through regardless of your account balance, and you'll be charged that fee.
The center's Leslie Parrish says banks rake in more than $17 billion a year in overdraft fees. Banks say customers can easily check their accounts on the internet or phone.
But it's very unclear sometimes. We hear of a lot of people have their paycheck deposited into their account. They make a string of debit card purchases and then find out it won't actually be credited for several days.
The Federal Reserve hopes to decide by summer whether to let customers opt in or out of their bank's overdraft programs. In Washington, I'm Danielle Carson for Marketplace.
A House panel this week takes up the issue of energy efficiency. A major focus, how much power manufacturers use. Turns out there's tons of room for improvement, according to a new study from MIT. From the Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio, here's Marketplace's Janet Babin.
Over the past 50 years, we've figured out how to make smaller and smaller products, from semiconductor chips to ultra-tiny nano devices. As products shrunk, manufacturing processes improved. But energy efficiency didn't follow. Modern manufacturing methods use up more energy than old-school factories. That according to MIT professor Timothy Gutowski.
Their energy intensity is on the order of 1,000 and as high as 1,000,000 times more energy intensive than our old-time conventional manufacturing processes.
Gutowski analyzed 20 manufacturing systems from a cast iron foundry to carbon nanofiber production. All of them were energy gluttons. The reason? Fuel and electricity are cheap. He says efficiency will happen on its own if energy prices rise or if government imposes stricter efficiency standards, something Congress may consider this week. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
World leaders meeting this week at the G20 summit in London to discuss the global economic fallout, and the UN Secretary General is calling for a $1 trillion stimulus package for developing nations. Gretchen Wilson has that from Johannesburg. Gretchen, what is Ban Ki-moon asking for exactly?
Well, Bonn really wants to make sure that G20 leaders don't lose sight of the challenges in developing countries. He's looking for $1 trillion, half of which would go towards aid and long-term lending, and the other half to go through the IMF to inject liquidity into emerging economies. The idea is to keep the lights on, keep hospitals running, keep markets working to make sure that the developing world does not collapse. The idea is that there's a growing consensus here in the developing world that we need to really look at the priorities here, and that there's a number of people, even in the West, who are saying, forget about corporations. It's actually the developing world that's too big to fail.
Does he think he's going to get this money?
Well, of course, it's a tough sell in this environment. The fact is, developed countries and rich countries have actually already dropped the ball on their earlier commitments to increase aid to poor countries. You might remember back in 2005, the G8 made a big song and dance about how they'd beef up this aid to developing countries. But by and large, they haven't paid up. So the hope is that they're actually going to meet those targets and then some. The World Bank is actually joining this cause and saying, you know, 40% of the world's poorest countries are highly exposed to the credit crunch, and that 53 million people will be stuck in poverty for something that they really had nothing in creating. So there is a number of people who are really looking towards the world's poorest and saying, you know, we really need to make sure that we don't forget about them in the midst of all this.
So, Gretchen, what's the response to these bailouts and stimulus packages in the developing world?
There's a sense that, you know, wait a minute, hang on. There's all this hand-wringing in the United States about a crisis. You know, well, what is a crisis? Here in the developing world, there are many people who are saying, billions of us here were already in crisis before this whole thing even started. And so we need to make sure that our issues are remaining front and center as the whole world negotiates how they're going to respond to this financial crisis.
Gretchen Wilson joining us from South Africa. Gretchen, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Hope you can join us at our website, marketplace.org, the Scratch Pad, with our online host and blogger, Scott Jagow, there. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.